Since the first referendum was held in 1640 in the Massachusetts Bay Colony, referendums have been the best tool to address constitutional, morale, territorial, and other issues directly by the people. I'm Skynell Hughes, and on today's 360 View, we are going to look at referendums around the globe. And if referendums continue to be the most effective way for a society to remind its leaders who actually has the power. A referendum is defined as a direct vote on a law, proposal, or political issue. Now that sounds simple in theory, but like everything else in politics, can be made to be extremely complicated if a political class wishes it to be. Now Europe counts for 2/3 of all national referendums held in the world. This is mainly due to Switzerland, who alone counts for more than 1/3 of all national referendums and 2/3 of referendums held in a democratic society. Now, we saw in 2016 a record number of popular direct democracy votes or national referendums around the world. 26 countries held national referendums, which was far more than the last record year of 1991 and 1992, where most of those votes were held as a response to the political developments following the Cold War. Now, the collapse of communism in the Soviet Union, which spurred the use of referendums all around the world. You know, the first vote on the UK's EU membership and the Colombian peace agreement were two of the most significant. And as we saw with the UK Brexit vote, one referendum was not enough. Another had to take place when the outcome was not what the elite wanted. Referendums are not just for large issues which impact the entire country. They also can apply to individual territories, districts, or states. Now, these referendums are a type of rebellion, and in the present, most about social issues which go against the national policy already in place. This is where interest groups can influence government by either threatening to call a referendum if proposed legislation is not satisfactory, or call a referendum and hope the people will choose their side. Now, in the past, this was a tool mainly used by conservatives against more liberal policies, which extended government reach. However, today's referendums find themselves mainly about environmental movements and immigration policies. So for more on this, here is our international report.
A referendum is supposed to be a vote giving power to the people over the government. We have seen this many times in history. Most recently, nearly 4 million Cubans voted in favor of a referendum to legalize same-sex unions and adoption of children by homosexuals. The preliminary results showed 66.87% of votes in favor, with 33.13% against. Many Christians and social conservatives opposed the amendments. While the island's government once criminalized the homosexuality, this referendum was accepted. The niece of the late leader Fidel Castro, Mariela, has taken the lead in advocating for LGBT rights. President Miguel Díaz-Canel, who has promoted the law, celebrated the passing referendum, tweeting out, "Love is now the law." While a referendum is supposed to give people power over their government, this past year, the UN stepped in to stop the referendum from regions choosing to separate from Ukraine. The UN General Assembly is accusing Moscow of attempted illegal annexation and calling on member states to ignore the results of referendums in four former East Ukrainian regions on joining Russia. The 143-5 vote followed the General Assembly's refusal to secret ballots. This was a request by Russia due to the intense pressure from the US and its allies to condemn Moscow for trying to acquire the regions. Russia's UN ambassador, Vasily Nemenzia, argued for many countries it may be very difficult to express their views publicly due to the insistence of other countries. Despite immense pressure, four nations joined Russia in voting against the UN resolution. These were Belarus, Syria, Nicaragua, and North Korea. It is important to note just how many countries chose to abstain from the vote. There were 35, including China, India, South Africa, Pakistan, Thailand, Cuba, Vietnam, Armenia, and Algeria. Before launching its special military operation in Ukraine, Russia recognized the sovereignty of the Donetsk and Lugansk People's Republics, arguing Kiev failed to represent and protect people living there. Residents of two other regions voted by wide margins in public referendums to declare independence and join Russia. President Vladimir Putin signed unification treaties with the four new Russian regions. However, the UN General Assembly condemned Putin's actions as illegal, saying the four regions are temporarily occupied because of Russia's aggression in violation of Ukraine's territorial integrity and sovereignty. The UN pressured all nations to refuse to recognize the region as part of Russia. Moscow argued referendums are the only way for the people to exercise their rights and make their own decision on what country they want to be part of and protect themselves from their former government. Referendums have been used throughout history to make changes by a government system. In 1991, for example, Bangladesh asked voters to decide whether or not to reintroduce a parliamentary government. This led to the president becoming the constitutional head of state and allowed parliament to elect the president. This also moved the position of prime minister to become the executive head of the country, and it completely got rid of the role of the vice president. Since this turn, critics have said parliament has failed to become the center point of Bangladesh political and legislative activities. This is because parliament has been dysfunctional and ruling parties will completely bypass it when making laws. I'm Roxana Solano for 360 View. Back to you, Scotty.
Stay tuned. We'll be back after the break with more on global referendums with our guests.
So what we've got to do is identify the threats that we have.
It's crazy.
Confrontation, let it be an arms race.
Who is on offense? Very dramatic development.
I personally am going to resist.
I don't see how that strategy will be successful.
Very critical time.
Time to sit down and talk.
Is your media a reflection of reality? In a world transformed, what will make you feel safer? Isolation or community? Are you going the right way or are you being led somewhere? Which direction? What is truth? What is fake? In a world corrupted, you need to descend. So join us in the depths, or remain in the shallows.
I'll look forward to talking to you all.
That technology should work for people.
A robot must obey the orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law.
Show your identification.
We should be very careful about artificial intelligence.
The point, obviously, is to create trust rather than fear.
I would like to take on various jobs.
I mean, with artificial intelligence, we are summoning the demon.
A robot must protect its own existence or its own existence.
Welcome back. Joining us now is Dr. Richard Albert, professor of government at the University of Texas. His work focuses on the role of referendums worldwide. He's also the author of a recent edited volume entitled The Limits and the Legitimacy of Referendums. Welcome, Professor. Professor, tell us about your research and what you have found in your work regarding referendums.
I write and research about constitutional change. So how constitutions all around the world change. They change by amendment, they change by revision, they change by interpretation, they change by revolution, they change by replacement. I write about that from a comparative perspective, from a doctrinal perspective, historical, and also theoretical. So the books that I've written, the books that I've edited, the articles that I've written, all deal with these kind of subjects. With specific regard to referendums, I found some fascinating results in my research about referendums all around the world. Let me give you three of the results that I've found that to me are quite interesting. One, when you put a referendum question to the people, they're likely to vote yes if it's a constitutional referendum. So about 94% of all constitutional referendums in the history of the world have been approved by the people. This is a finding that appears in a book that I recently co-edited called The Limits and Legitimacy of Referendums. It's a chapter written by Zach Elkins and Alex Hudson, a fascinating finding. Second thing that's very interesting is that some constitutions around the world actually make it mandatory for referendums to be held in relation to constitutional amendments. Very, very interesting. Third and final interesting point that I'll mention, there are dozens that I can mention, third and final that I'll mention just now. Even when constitutions do not make it mandatory or even mention a referendum in their constitutions, when it comes to how to amend the Constitution, sometimes political actors will use a discretionary, optional referendum when they seek to amend the Constitution. So these are three fascinating elements, I think, about the use of referendums all around the world.
Do we see any geographical distribution of referendums throughout the world? Do they tend to take place in certain regions or even under certain types of governments?
We see referendums all around the world. So whether or not the country is a common law country or a civil law country, whether it's American or European, whether it's a presidential system or a parliamentary system, referendums really happen all around the world. Now, for example, in the United States, there has never been a national referendum, but there are hundreds of statewide referendums that happen all the time. In Canada, where I'm from, we've had three national referendums, but many provincial referendums. Recently, there was a referendum in Cuba, there was one in Chile, there have been some in Ukraine, Russia, there are always referendums in Switzerland. So they happen all over the world.
Do referendums and their results tend to surprise, or do we find that polling can usually accurately predict the outcome?
The most recent example I can share with you comes from Chile. So Chile just held a nationwide referendum on whether or not to ratify the proposed constitution. Leading up to the day of the referendum, it was very close. People weren't sure whether the people would vote yes or no on adopting the new constitution. But I think most analysts believe that the answer would be no, but not by much. And then the referendum was held on September 4th, if I'm not mistaken, and the result came back surprising and shocking to everyone because just how poorly the advanced polls fared in predicting how the people would vote. And so I'm not surprised that polls don't get it right. Just as I'm not surprised that polls don't get election predictions correctly. We know what happened in 2016 here in the United States, for example. That happens often around the world.
So when are referendums actually considered legitimate? And when are they considered illegitimate?
Referendums are a powerful tool for authoritarians. They're powerful because authoritarians can abuse them, and they can send a message to the world that the people are standing firmly with them. And that's a problem. It's a problem because when you can abuse referendums in this way, you distort the true views, the true feelings, the true hopes and aspirations of the people. And you're doing so for two purposes as an authoritarian leader. You're doing so for a domestic purpose, and you're doing so for an external purpose. Domestically, you're rigging the rules of the vote and rigging the outcome of the vote to signal to your people that they stand with you as the leader. You're also doing so for the world. This is like a public relations campaign to show the world that the people are standing with you. And so even if you're departing from the norms of international law, from the norms of democratic governance, when you hold a referendum and you rig the rules so that it suggests that the people are standing with you as the leader, the world sees that, and you as the authoritarian leader want the world to believe that you have the support of your people. Now, we know better. We know better when authoritarian leaders misuse and abuse referendums. We know what they're doing, but that doesn't obviate the reality that the people in the country may not know. And that's a problem.
Okay, Professor, just between us, are you actually ever surprised by the result of a referendum?
I'm never surprised about the result of referendums because I don't purport to know what the people believe. That's why we hold referendums. You asked earlier about what makes a referendum legitimate. I think a couple of things need to go into the design of a referendum in order for us to be confident about the outcome. So there are inputs that you put into the design of the referendum, and then the output is the result. So some things that you must input into the design in order to be confident of the legitimacy of the outcome. One, the people have to go into the ballot box to vote fully informed and aware of the consequences and implications of their vote. That was not the case in Brexit, for example, right? That's why you had a lot of people suggesting that there should be a second confirmatory vote after the first vote, because a lot of people were shocked after they voted yes, Brexit, and they're like, wait, this means we're leaving the EU? This means that I have maybe to get a new job? And so the design of the referendum has to be such that the people are fully aware of the consequences and implications of a vote, either yes or no. In order to help do that, those who are holding the referendum have to be willing to fund informational campaigns. That's best done by having an independent third-party institution that's responsible for managing, administering, and running referendums. In some countries, this is an electoral branch that operates independently of the political actors who are elected. That's the best way to do it. But you see, this electoral branch, this electoral body, this independent body would go around and hold these roving informational sessions for people in different parts of the country to learn about the referendum stakes, about everything that it entails, and to ask questions. Another thing that I think is useful to design a referendum is to fund opposite sides. So you have money, public monies, that are available to a yes campaign with its own spokespersons and representatives, and a no campaign with its own spokespersons and representatives. So that's also very important. One more thing. The design of the actual question itself must be such that it's seen as fair. Referendum and psychology, very, very closely connected, because you can phrase a question in a way that leads you to a particular kind of answer. And so it's very important that in the phrasing of the referendum question, the question be posed in a way that's neutral, impartial, and crystal clear. So these are just three things that I think are important as inputs in the design of a referendum that can then lead you to be confident in the outcome of the referendum in terms of its legitimacy. There are many other things that we can talk about when it comes to the design, but those are three very important things.
So what is the future of referendums globally moving forward into the 21st century? Will we see more or less of them, and how will they be used?
I predict two things about the future of referendums in all of the world. One is that when new constitutions are written, you're going to see more and more constitutions require the use of referendums in connection with amending the Constitution, revising the Constitution, and replacing the Constitution. Two, you're going to see increasing recourse to referendums all around the world, whether or not existing constitutions make referendums a requirement. And this is because there is an irresistible siren song that referendums, I think, issue to leaders. It's an irresistible call to go to the people, to ask them for their input, to get that input, and then clothe yourself as the leader in a veneer of sociological legitimacy, the kind of sociological legitimacy that comes only from the will of the people as expressed in a direct vote, which is what a referendum is. So those are my two predictions about the future of referendums in the world. If you don't like them, it's too bad, because we're going to see a lot more of them everywhere in the world.
Well, thank you, Professor Richard Albert, professor of government at the University of Texas. Many countries like to say their use of referendums solidifies their country as a democracy. And in many cases, it is a good benchmark. While many referendums do occur underneath democratic regimes, throughout history, authoritarian regimes have also had their share of referendums. From Napoleon to Nazi Germany to Romania and so forth. Just like with elections, those in power can limit opposing views, control choice, restrict voters, and produce false results, or even dismiss if those results are not to their liking. All while telling the outside they too are a democracy because they let the people have the power of choice. However, usually in those cases, it is obvious going into the referendum as well as with the results, there is little credibility. But the accusation of a false referendum can be just as insulting to the voters as well. In fact, when those in power are upset with the results of a referendum, especially if it's overwhelmingly against their position, discrediting the process is the only tool left to try and justify their position. In Africa, only 9 of the 92 referendums which have been held have failed to produce a 90% yes vote. One of the biggest changes in India history was a referendum to abolish the monarchy, which was held in 1975. An overwhelmingly support of 97.5% of voters resulted in Sikkim becoming an Indian state. One has to actually wonder, though, when results of a referendum where the people voted are so overwhelmingly to one side, what does it say about those who are against? Whose side are they exactly on? I'm Skynell Hughes, and this has been your 360 view of the news which matters to you. Until next time.